Blog Talk Radio.
Check us out on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Out on HuntsvilleBlack.com, another place where we're bringing forces to power.
To the rap, hip hop.
Also on Facebook, you can just type in HuntsvilleBlack.com and get us on there also as well. We are bringing forces. Editors and business partners.
Okay, in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I discuss the queen mentality versus the hood rat mentality with April Gail Lee. April holds a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Texas at Arlington. That's UTA, and a master's of mental health counseling from Walden University. April is a strong black queen who has strong views about the relationship between the black man and the black woman. She also has a powerful personal story about her experiences when blacks encounter government, ran child services, and the effects on black lives. She lends an important voice to the Facebook page Afrocentric Psychology in the Black Community that provokes great discussion and debate. We will discuss what makes a black queen and what constitutes a black hood rat and how we can reunite the black man and black woman for the betterment of the black community. Hello, April. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm making it just out here doing everything I can to uplift and stir the black community into thought-provoking action, words and actions. Could you tell us a little bit about, first let's talk about, can you give us some examples of the damage it does taking our kids to the child support system, which is mainly because of the broken down relationship between the black man and black woman. Could you elaborate more on the relationship today between black man and black woman?
Actually, I can. I have a lot of personal experiences with the child support system and, you know, just the court system in general. Just to let the callers, you know, the listeners and callers, you know, future callers know, I've been married twice. My first marriage, you know, I had a son. You know, I had a daughter outside of wedlock, you know, when I was younger. Like I said, so this is a non-judgmental point of view, but it's a point of view that needs to be discussed. When I got married, I was 18, so I was kind of young, and I didn't know what I was getting into because I feel like that I wasn't taught the essentials that I needed, you know, to be prepared for marriage and a relationship with a black man, and that's what I'm going to focus on here. But anyway, I was too young to get married, and so about 5-6 years into it, my first marriage, I told him that I wanted a divorce, you know, and it broke his heart because I, you know, I know he was really in love with me, and I understood that, you know, and being the person I am, I didn't want him to be hurt. So I said, you know, let's just split mutually, you know, we'll share custody because even though I didn't want to be with him, I grew up with my mom and dad who have been married for 40 years. So I know the importance of having a mom and dad in your life. You know, my parents were not perfect. I'm not going to say that they were. But having both of them in my life made me the person that I am today, all my positives. You know, so it's very important to have a mom and a dad in your life, equally important. Neither is more important. So with that being said, I told him that I would never, you know, keep him from his son, you know, and as well as his stepdaughter, because he did love my daughter like that was his own, you know, at the time. So I told him I would never keep him from him. And so basically, you know, I trusted him and, you know, it came to bite me, you know, in the behind, I should say, because he used the system. Because what he did is because the system is so crooked, he had me serve papers, but it wasn't me. You know, he had someone impersonate me, and so he did everything legally because I told him, you know, he was the breadwinner because I was pretty much a stay-at-home mom, so he was the breadwinner. So I told him, you know, go ahead and take care of the divorce, so he said he would. So he had me served, but it wasn't me, and I didn't know anything about the court date, and everything was planned. I'm pretty sure because he paid thousands of thousands of dollars for his lawyer because he had that type of money. And so they had a court date, and I didn't know nothing about it. And so because I didn't show up and they said that I was served, you know, they gave him primary custody of. And so and during that ruling, they also put me on child support. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And so that's how you know that the court system doesn't care anything about the children, especially when it comes to black children, because I wasn't even there. I didn't even show up, you know, and they put me on child support and still gave him primary custody because of one missed court date that I didn't know nothing about. And so, like I said, I called, you know, I got a lawyer. I called a lawyer. I said, is there anything I can do about it? He said, no, because I was served, you know, and I was like, well, can I take him to court and get, like, you know, joint custody like he had agreed to, and he went back on his knee and said no because you've been on child support for a year and you are behind. But the thing about it is I didn't know nothing about it. You see what I'm saying? So,
yeah, that's this point here, and that's what goes back mm-hmm. to say that there's a wealth in custody.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount of
mm-hmm.
wealth that comes with having
right.
that full custody. And then that's when people that they can be vindictive, they can be a narcissist, and that's when they're going to turn that system against you. And now, he was lucky. You said he had money, so he had a lawyer. But think about when the custodial parent goes to the child support services. Once they get that number, the state gets involved. The state now has an interest, a financial interest in that child, so they're going to back that person up who has that wealth of custody with free lawyers, free anything. Basically, they got every when the relationship breaks down and it gets a little personal and people get vindictive, that's when a person can turn that state services against the non-custodial parent, and they just sort of put them in this hamster wheel of child support. And it's something that you probably some dues and money that you will never be able to escape, because I don't know how it is in Texas, but here in Alabama, and I think it's like that everywhere, every 30 days that total amount, it doesn't matter if you're making your payments, but every 30 days that total amount is not paid, there is an interest tacked on to that. So you can, like you said, you started out a year behind because you didn't know that. And so every month, even though you make those payments starting at that year, every month that total amount is not paid, it's multiplied by, I know here it's between 12 and 15%. So that sort of puts people into a financial situation that they could never be able legally to escape.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, I agree 100%, because when we divorced, like I said, he was the breadwinner. I was a stay-at-home mom. And so me being the good mom that I am, and I shouldn't have did this, I asked him, to take my son for a few weeks. And so that's how he got me. And so he was ever so happy, because when he was in the process of the divorce, I had my son. But I didn't want my son to suffer when he had, and I really didn't have as much. So I wanted him to be in that environment temporarily until I found a job. When I found a job, I said, okay, you can give my son, we can start the shared custody or whatever. And that's when he trapped me. But yes, like I said, I have breakdowns. Like once every couple of weeks, I have breakdowns, and this has been going on for like 5-6 years. So, and I have breakdowns because it's very hard, to deal with this situation. Go ahead.
Let me throw this point in there. A lot of people don't realize how hard it is. Because once, like I said, that person, once they get that wealth of custody, if that person isn't right and that person is not socially conscious, they're going to use that system to grind that other person down, not just financially. There's a grinding down going on mentally. And I want to ask you this question. Did you ever, and I see this a lot in the black community where I live at, some people use that wealth of custody and that legalization of custody to carry out parental alienation. Now, did you experience any parental alienation against you once, the tables had turned and they saw they were in power, or if they got mad or something? Did you ever have parental alienation used against you in your situation?
Oh, all the time. Anytime that I say something that he doesn't like, because like I said, he refused to talk to me because he's so bitter. So I talked to my son, because my son has, like I said, he's blessed with a top-of-the-line cell phone because, like I said, his dad has money. So all the time, like right now, I haven't seen my son in like 8 months. And the reason why, because he claims that my son is afraid to be around me. Now, I've never even gave my son a spanking, you see what I'm saying, in his life, because my son, he's a good child. He really is. So I never even respect my son, but yet he's afraid to be around me, you see, because he plays those mind games.
It's very hard. Let me add this. What you just said is one of the classic tactics of parental alienation, and that is to make the other parent seem like they're dangerous to be around. Mm-hmm. That's one of the classic top things that identifies that parental alienation, when they put that false fear inside of their mind. There needs to be a push to change parental alienation. Mm-hmm. It's domestic terrorism. That's exactly what it is.
Right.
Parental alienation may be the psychological term, but the real term it should be is domestic terrorism.
I do want to say this. The reason why, because I never gave him a reason, because I'm an excellent mother. He knows the only way that he could ever hurt me was to try to take my son away from me. So that's exactly what he did, because I hurt him, from breaking his heart. That's exactly what he did, because he knows how I feel about both my kids, that I would.
And on the other side, on the flip side, that happens. I see that a lot in the African-American community, too. The mother, like I said, this hood rat thing, I want people to know that hood rat come in all forms. When somebody says, when I say hood rat, I'm not just talking about females. I'm talking about males. But you can can point those out to both, because I've seen it happen on both sides. This issue boils down to when they divide it and try to put it male, female, that's when they distract mm-hmm. us. That's when we get mm-hmm. distracted. This thing is about custodial and non-custodial parenting. And the wealth that's in the wealth and some of the twistedness and crookedness, like you said, of the system, mm-hmm. favors and bends towards the non the custodial parent, no matter if they're male or female. All the state wanted that case number and somebody to grind into the ground, and they're satisfied. Right. They don't care if it's male or female. They just care about the case number. And we as black people need to stop giving them the case numbers.
Right, because they care about who's going to spend the most money. And like I said, I've took him to court so many times, wasted thousands of dollars, you know, and we actually did have joint custody like several times, and then he always goes back. But in fairness, I do want to say that the reason these last 8 months is as long as that he never kept my son from me. And the reason why that is, I've got to be honest about this, is because during my second marriage, you know, there was domestic violence. You see what I'm saying? My son didn't witness it, but he found out about it. And so he's using that against me now. It was just domestic violence against my, you know, second husband or whatever. That had nothing to do with me. My son wasn't injured or anything like that. So that's the reason why, but like I said, he plays those games. So I'm a victim of the next round, and then he's going to take away my son from me as well. You see what I'm saying? So, like
yeah,
I said, it's not a good thing.
The system's going to use that too.
Yeah. Right. But no, they wouldn't use that. He didn't, the courts didn't say, like I said, I haven't went to court because my son asked me not to go to court. Because he, you know, and I respect my son, I love my son, and I do think that a child should not have to have his parents running up and down the court, and I don't want to do that to my son. You see, because his dad has been doing that to him, making it hostile environment for him, making him grow up with parents running to court every time. And I don't want to do it so my son begged me, because if I went to court now, they would say, yes, you have to abide by the agreement. The message on had nothing to do with the son. Here's what if she's not with him anymore. You see what I'm saying? You can't think to say that. But out of respect for my son, I said, okay, I'm going to give you time, you know, to please your dad, whatever you need to do. But like I said, I ain't going to give you too much time, and then I'm going to have no other choice but to go back to court. Because, like I said, I'm supposed to have you when I'm supposed to have you. So, like I said, he's keeping him from me. So, like I said, that's the situation. I want, you know, I just want to clarify that.
Yes. So, on the psychology part of this, when looking at parental alienation, what are some of the things that can happen to a child when a parent is forcing and training that type of alienation against the non-custodial parent? Now, I know that there's been long studies about how, in the end, that this, we as black people got to understand the black community. Number one, that system was set up to damage us, our personal relationships even further and split us further apart. But I want to know about the damage it does to the child. When you got this rift going on, you got a parent trying to install false fear and all these hatred and everything else inside of a child, what does it do to that child in the long run outside of destroying the self-esteem? We know in the end it's going to destroy the self-esteem. Any parent out there doing that need to listen. I don't care if you're male or female. If you're damaging that child against that non-custodial parent, you are destroying your child's self-esteem, number one. And there's a lot of other things involved. Could you tell our listeners something about the damage that you could do by carrying out such a process?
I don't know where to begin. Like I said, I know for a fact my child is damaged. You see what I'm saying? Now I have to suffer now, but I know when he gets older, he's going to see the truth, the light, and the way, basically. He's gonna be angry that his dad did that to him because, like I said, the 8 months we've been apart, we can't get those moments back. And like I said, I love my son more than life itself. And so I want to be in my son's life as much as possible, and I want his father to be in his life too. You know, if he's going to be a positive influence, he want to be in his life. So like I said, he's going to realize that he was robbed, you know, having a mother that loves him. Like I said, he doesn't get it right now, but it's definitely going to harm him for the rest of his life, and that's what hurts me the most, more than my hurt that I...
Yeah,
that
it's
going to... You know, yeah. So
yeah,
but let me tell you. Because... Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say that you just have to, we have to realize this. Non-custodial parents have to realize this fact. As soon as that supremacist button is pushed downtown, you have no more political power. Your political power is gone because the state is now involved and they feel like they got something at stake to maintain that original case. Because a lot of times when those cases change, and outcomes of those cases change, they are the ones who are losing out. But we have to remember, we have to remember we have no more power once it gets to that level. The only power you got is your intellectual and your spiritual power. So, Queen, I'm going to tell you, keep your head up and stay positive. And like you said, it always turns out when that child grows up and realizes that they always end up hating that parent who did that alienation and who told those lies. When they figure out the truth, they're getting enjoyment by seeing it now. That's the narcissism part of that parent that's doing that. But in the end, when they get that hate in return, when that child grows up and sees the truth, the hate is going to be something that it's going to make it hard for them.
And like I said, I not only cry for myself when I have my breakdown, when I just can't take it anymore because it doesn't make any sense, because there was no reason. I know his dad loves him, you know, in his way, and he knows for a fact that I love my son. I would never do anything to harm my son. So I not only weep for myself, but I weep for my son. Because that's what this is really about, our children and building, you know, our children up to be the people that they need to be. So, like I said, I weep more for my son. I really, truly do from the bottom of my heart, because he doesn't deserve this type of treatment. He really doesn't. More than myself. I'm an adult. Like I said, he doesn't deserve. And like I said, he can tell. He's always been able to feel that his dad had animosity towards me. And since he was 2 years old, it has made him uncomfortable. Because that's when we, you know, woke up or whatever. So, like I said, my son has always felt that and has definitely shaped who he is. And I just hate it for him.
And that's why it's so sad when that always happens, because a son is going to tend to side with his mother and look out and care more and have a more emotional connection to the mother. And the daughter, she's going to have a more connection to the father. And when women get to understand, especially when you got a son, especially when there's a daughter involved, a daughter looks at her father as a measure to measure all men. She's going to look at her father and take that as how to measure all men. Now, if you constantly tell them that their father ain't shit, or you're constantly doing all these other things like this, destroying that image through parental alienation and hatred and false fear, if you're constantly doing that, you got to realize what type of mindset you're putting your daughter in for the future when she starts to come in contact with the male energy. Is her idea of the male energy going to be that they ain't shit, or that they ain't shit unless there's money involved, they're paying? You know, they totally take the emotional connection out from the child and put that all back into a financial situation. That's why I call it financial slavery, is because the money becomes a central issue. And the problem is, once you designated a non-custodial parent, the courts don't even consider you as a parent in the normal sense. Your role, they push you out of every role in the child's life. Your role becomes primarily financial, and they don't care about your role in anything else, what's going on in school, what's going on emotionally and spiritually. They only care about the dollar sign on it.
Right, and like I said, you know how I feel. Men are equally as important to children as women. The mothers and the fathers are equally as important. I can't place higher value on either one, to be honest with you. So.
No, there's no higher value, because the child needs that feminine and masculine energy in their lives, and they need a positive one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. So what I did want to discuss, you know, after sharing my story, and like I said, have definitely put, I just want to touch on this a little bit before I get into the solution. They have definitely put negative things about me to my son. And when I say they, I mean my ex-husband and his new wife, you know, because like I said, for whatever, I don't know if it's jealousy on her end, but they have put negative things about my son. Remember when I told you early in the beginning of the conversation that I asked him to watch my son for a couple weeks? He told my son that I pushed him out, that I abandoned him. All that. He made my son believe that because my son don't remember what happened, and my son actually talked to me about it, and we sat up there and cried together. And I was like, I would never push you away. I can't believe your dad was that. That's crazy. So I had to calm him down and talk to him about that. But yes, what you say to your kids matters all the time, and the fact that his father had him believe that I abandoned him, it has definitely damaged you know, him as a person, it makes him extra sensitive. You can't even get that, like, the fact that he would even speak those words, my son, there's nothing that can ever undo that. He just has to learn how to heal from that.
There's nothing that can undo that, and that is so damaging to instill that feeling of abandonment. That's one of the worst feelings that a child can feel, is that feeling of abandonment. That's why parental alienation is something that we got to bring more attention to, and we got to fight it and call it out at all costs.
So the first key that I want to talk about is that with parents, we got to build morals and self-esteem in our children. And the way that we do this is having a mother and a father there for them. You know, relationships sometimes work. We hope it does work, you know, but if it doesn't work, still be there for your children, mother and father. So that's the key of building morals and self-esteem, just teaching them right from wrong and building their self-esteem, letting them know that their mother and father loves them. And the way that we can do this is that even if relationships don't work out, still be there for your children. Put your bitterness, whatever happens in relationship, put that aside and worry about the children, because the children are our future. I know that's cliche to say, but that's how I really feel. You know,
that's a true statement.
Right. And how we can build morals and self-esteem is by teaching our children, you know, like I said, right and wrong, because the focus on that is keeping our sons out of prison, because a lot of our sons go to prison. So that's how a lot of children end up following as well. So it's not just broken relationships. It's also a lot of our sons are going to prison. That's just the reality of it. And then another thing is keeping our sons alive. Now, if we teach our children morals and respect, then they'll have morals and respect towards each other. So we have a lot of black-on-black violence. I'm not blaming us for that, to be honest with you, because it's the design of white supremacy for us to, you know, have no money, have no hope, and then turn to each other and treat each other with disrespect. That's the design of it. But we got to recognize that that's the design of white supremacy, and we got to avoid doing that no matter what. Even if, you know, you're mad at another black man, just realize that's your brother, and that, you know, if you kill him, it's like you're killing yourself and you're killing a whole generation. So we got to keep our sons out of prison, and we got to keep them alive. And then also, if in some situations there's nothing you can do to avoid, you know, a father not being there for whatever reason, or even a mother. And in that situation, we need other family members. If you know that someone's a single parent, we need them to step in, you know, and be a mentor. So, you know, if your uncle and you know that you have a sister that's a single mother, step in, you know, and be that father figure that they need. We need to close those gaps, because I see a lot of single mothers who have brothers and sisters or cousins, and they don't step in. You have to step in.
Yes,
it's not a choice, it's an obligation.
The next point, I want to get this in. We're down to about 30 seconds. What I want to say is also everything that you said is exactly what we need to hear. And I also, as one of the solutions, I also want to see that if you got a problem with somebody and they have went down and they have pressed that white supremacist button, go and see if that person, male or female, if they got a cousin in the or a family member in the conscious community. You got to swallow your pride. Try to get somebody that they're connected to, they're related to, from the conscious community. Go out and explain and talk to them how these child support systems are set up to destroy the black family. And we can work our problems out amongst ourselves, and we can reunite. But April, we will talk again. This is just the beginning. We're going to do a whole series and a whole new show so we can try to heal our community. Thanks for being a guest.
Can I say before we end?
Go ahead. I don't know how much
we
get in.
Okay, well, next time we'll be talking about teaching our children how to value themselves beyond sexuality.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Okay.
Bringing voices to power. They can't stop us. Check us out on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com.